Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I am your host, Rob Oliver, and you are going to learn something today, and you are hopefully going to be inspired to pick up a part of your business that might be slacking a little bit. My guest is an expert in follow-up, and she is a sales strategist. Her name is Wanda Allen, and she says follow-up is crucial to closing more sales and having strong relationships, but it is a real struggle for many sales professionals and entrepreneurs. Today, you'll learn the common barriers and how to overcome them so you can be sure you're getting this very important work done on a consistent basis. Wanda, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. So let's start this way. What's kind of your backstory? How did you get to be an expert in follow-up and sales?
Okay, so I had a 25-year corporate career, and I was a business banker. And I spent the lion's share of my career managing SBA departments, which is Small Business Administration loans. And I managed big departments, $100 million plus in annual loan volume, and that kind of forced me to develop a strong skill for creating systems, because how do you stay on top of all those loans and rules and regs, because they're government loans? And then when I was asked if I would consider the position of branch manager, and I was ready for a change because it'd been about 15 years of managing SBA. So I accepted the position, which put me into sales. And I studied the sales process and realized how critical follow-up is to the sales process, to every single stage in the sales process. And I thought, how do you stay on top of all this? And I fell back on my systems of, I fell back on my skill of creating systems and developed systems for following up. And then there's an extension of following up, which is called staying in touch, known today as relationship management. And so I developed systems for both of those phases in the sales process. And then when my bank was acquired, we were not the lead bank, and I was a senior vice president, and I was part of senior management, and the lead bank had someone in my position, and you know how that story goes. And so I wasn't sure what I was going to do, and a friend of mine suggested, why don't you speak about how you follow up? And I thought, what a crazy idea. That kind of sounds ridiculous. But I thought, you know what do I have to lose? And I learned really quickly that in general, people really struggle in this area. And I didn't know. I didn't know that I was doing anything special or out of the ordinary. But then it just evolved into where I am today, 11 years later.
Okay. So I think you and I have kind of a little bit in common with this. Okay. As speakers, there's part of it that feels like, this is just little old me doing my little old thing, and it's nothing really special. Mm-hmm. And yet there are a lot of people out there that struggle with exactly what you and I have struggled with, or what we have learned about, and we're able to share. Here is how I was in your situation, and this is what I have learned. And now this is the really amazing thing for me. And we were talking about this a little bit in the pre-show. You know, my spinal cord injury, right? I've learned so much about life, and what I like to do is to be able to talk to people and to share with them, here, I don't want you to have to go through what I went through, but let me share with you what I've learned. And that's really what you're able to do. So talk to me then about, I would imagine, creating a system and talking about systemizing things. Sometimes people's eyes just glaze over and they're like, this is not my thing. Can you talk about how to make your system, how to make it something that people are able to work with and not just kind of zone out when you start talking about it?
Yeah. So systems, it's a cold clinical word, isn't it? And for our creatives and free spirits, it'll all but give them a high.
Right.
And so what I say to those people is, if you don't like the word systems, fine, replace it with daily routine. So if I said, what's your system or daily routine, they mean the same exact thing. for getting your follow-up work done and your relationship management work. So that can soften it and open them up to go, oh, okay. Yeah, I don't have routines or I don't have systems, or maybe I do. The one system that is truly a system and not a routine is a CRM, okay, customer relationship manager. And that's the heart and soul and manager of all routines or systems.
Okay. A lot of people have CRMs, you know, customer relationship management software, and they put all of their customers in there. But that's not enough, I'm assuming. How do you develop that next step for now that you have your customers and your clients in that CRM, knowing what to do with them and creating the next step?
Yeah, so you have always known what the next step is, especially in the prospecting stage, is by asking the right questions. And what the CRM does, it's your assistant who tells you who you need to contact and when. That's how I want you to view a CRM. Is so, but the only way you can do that is if you're setting up reminders for each contact. A reminder date is your call to action on each person you have in there. So having a bunch of people in your CRM with no reminder dates is no different than having stacks and stacks of business cards sitting on your desk. You're never called to them. And so it's using that and using the notes section, because you don't want to try to remember things. You know, that people are so stressed out because, and things slip through the cracks. They can't remember. They don't have any, they're not using a CRM. So they're having to rely on other inefficient, ineffective methods, such as spiral notebooks, sticky notes, the cell phone, which is not a CRM. And, you know, these are just big time wasters. Email, a lot of people use their email. It just doesn't work. Nothing replaces a CRM.
Okay. So can you make some suggestions about what are good CRMs to use? There's a number of them out there. Maybe tell us, what is it that you use or what is it that you recommend for others?
Yeah. So I wish I could say this is the one for everyone, but I can't say that because we're all so different. And I also encourage less is more, simpler is better, because if it's too complex or complicated, you're not going to use it. It's going to be overwhelming, especially if you're not really comfortable with technology. So people do want to know what I use, and it's a funny name. It's called Less Annoying. And it's simple, but it's relevant. And if your audience wants to use, check out, see Less Annoying, mention my name. I'm an affiliate with them, so I'm being very transparent, okay? You'll get a free 60-day trial, and most CRMs offer 30. Having said that, I don't care if you see Less Annoying or not. All I care about is that you get one that you will use. But if you like Less Annoying, take advantage of the 60-day free trial. There's a HubSpot, H-U-B, Spot is another good one. Pipe Drive, P-I-P-E, Drive. Zoho has been around for a long time, Z-O-H-O. And don't think you have to make a big old investment, because you don't. They're not expensive. Less Annoying's $15 a month. We're not talking a lot of money here. The more sophisticated it is, the more expensive it'll be. But still, it is a very reasonable cost, and it's one of the most important assets you will have in your business. So please don't be penny wise and pound foolish when making the decision. And there are free versions out there, but I just say proceed with caution, because you know what we get when it's free.
You get what you pay for, is what I've often been told.
Yeah, that old adage. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we talked about doing a CRM, talked about developing a system. There are some folks that say, well, like, I kind of have a system. Have you seen systems that aren't working or aren't functional? Like, what are the classic elements that you're looking at to say, I hear you, but there's a better way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, yes. And so what happens is, whatever people are using in place of a CRM, they will say, but this works for me. This is good. No, it's actually where you're comfortable. And it's the willing, you've got to be willing to be uncomfortable long enough to incorporate a CRM to your daily business life, get to know it, learn it, and then you will never not use one. Because I talk to a lot of people who are successful that don't use a CRM. And I think, you know, good for you, but I'm telling you, you've probably missed out on a lot more success because you haven't used a CRM. And there's just so much more business for you when you have order and organization to your contacts, prospect, clients, referral sources, colleagues. That has to be orderly. And that's what the CRM will do for you.
Yeah, I was going to say that what you're talking about is an investment of $15 a month, which, you know, give or take whatever it is. Mm-hmm. When you consider what your time is worth and the level of efficiency that that systematizing things can bring, it's making a difference. It's systematizing. Is that an actual word? Okay.
Well, it is in my vocabulary.
Oh, good. So you and I are on the same page with this. It's in the Rob and Wanda dictionary, which doesn't do a whole lot of good for anybody else. But you understand what I'm talking about, where you move something from being haphazard to being an actual, that you've got a plan in place for everybody. And okay, let me just give you an analogy and get your thoughts on this. Okay, there is a car dealership group here in the Pittsburgh area, and they have a process. Okay. Mm-hmm. And everybody goes through the same process. And now they've done all the research, and the research is that you have to bring somebody in and you have X number, you know, you have to talk to them for this long. You have to take them for a test drive. You stop in the middle of the test drive and you get out and you show them different aspects of the car. And then you, and they literally, the process takes an hour. Mm-hmm. And the sales manager is trained that if the customer has not, if you have not spent an hour with the customer, then you cannot sell them the vehicle. That to me sounds like it's a system that works for them and it's very well researched and it's very successful, but they're saying every single person that comes through the door fits this client, fits this model, and we're going to make it work. Are there ways to have adaptable systems so that, you know, in that instance, you have somebody who, like, I want the car. I know what I want. I want to come in. I want to write the check. I want to go home. Right. Mm-hmm. So how flexible can you be with systems, or how rigid do the systems need to be depending on who you're seeing or how you're working with clients? Is that a fair question?
Yes. And I mean, I think, you know, if you had in the scenario you just described, yes, they should. My recommendation would be to have two systems in place or processes. One is for the kind of the looky-loo, yeah, we're interested, we're not really sure. And then you have a process for the one that says, no, we want this, this is the kind of car we want, we're ready to write a check, or we've been approved. And you don't want to take them through the hour-long process because you may lose them if because they don't need all of that. So certainly there are situations where you do have a couple different processes, but you don't want a lot of them because it's going to get confusing and which one goes where, and it's ineffective.
Got it. So talk to me then about, like, you're talking about people that are creative and people that are more structured. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that that's kind of the personality. But is there a mindset that goes with this that helps people to be more organized in and systemic in what they're doing?
Yeah, so mindset's huge with follow-up. So there's two sides to that. The first side is what we're talking about right now is being open to processes and systems, because you have to be open or it's not going to happen. And you have to have the right mindset to get you to a place of openness, which is understanding what processes and systems and routines will do for you. They're going to create structure, and we all need some kind of structure to our day, because if you don't have any structure, you walk in and it is a free-for-all and you're doing what I call slipping and sliding all over the place. So they will also organize you. If you're not naturally an organized person, even more the reason to have some kind of process or systems in place. They're going to keep you consistent. You know, you can't have change in any area if you're not consistent. Mm. And the last thing they'll do is they're going to make you far more efficient. The more efficient you are, the more productive you're going to be. And the more productive you are, the more business you're going to close, which means the more money you're going to make. And that's always a great thing. So that's the mindset towards being open to processes and systems. The other mindset, which is a huge reason why people struggle with getting their follow-up work done, is fear. There's so much fear associated with following up, which is why many people don't do it. Fear of being uncomfortable. Is it uncomfortable work? Yeah, but in the beginning only. View it as a muscle. You know, the more you do it, stronger you get. Fear of being pushy. I hear that all the time. If I keep following up, I feel like I'm being pushy. You know, who wants to be that pushy salesperson? Fear of not knowing what to say. Fear of not knowing the outcome. Fear of appearing desperate. Well, I've heard that, you know, well, they're going to think I'm desperate for business if I keep following up. Fear of rejection. I mean, there's just so many fears that are associated with following up. So I always suggest do everything you can, get your mindset right to be on top of your fears. Don't let them be on top of you, because we all have fears. To not fear would to be not human, right? And so you have to manage them, and how you manage them is with your mindset. It's what goes on in between the ears. Okay. That's a crucial fundamental in follow-up.
Yeah. All right. So you mentioned the fact that, you know, you've got to have structure, and we all need structure. I remember someone pointing out, whenever you go to the grocery store and they sell boneless chickens, how do boneless chickens walk around, right? You need the bones in order to form the structure that goes around. You were talking about fear and about why people are afraid to follow up. And, you know, I was thinking about it from the perspective of, like, I called them once and they didn't want to buy at that point. And now I'm going to call them again only to have them not want to buy. And there's that, as you mentioned, fear of rejection. Are there ways then to do follow-up that is not necessarily a sales follow-up, or it's intended to establish relationship instead of create a sale? And I guess creating that relationship will eventually lead to a sale, but it's not like every time I call them, I am giving them a sales pitch. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. So research tells us that 80% of sales are made between the 5th and 12th contact. And I believe that to be a spot on statistic. So what I encourage is you follow up 5 times for the business or for the meeting. And then after that, yeah, you can start mixing it up where it's not every single time you're trying to make that sale or get that meeting booked. But you have to do your due diligence, is what I call it, with that prospect, because if they've expressed an interest, it is now your job to follow up with them and then stay in touch. And if a prospect tells you no, you decide, is this okay? I'm going to let them go, or it's somebody that I want to continue to stay in touch with. You know, there's a philosophy out there that no means not right now. And yeah, it can mean that, but I can't stay in touch with every prospect that tells me no. I don't have that kind of time. And so I pick and choose who I want to continue to stay in touch with after I've received the no.
Okay. I've got kind of a random question here, but I'm thinking, you mentioned that in your CRM, you're including notes. And how extensive are those notes, and what kind of things are you putting into the notes? Are you putting in there, like, what kind of pets they have, or spouse's name, or birth? Like, what are the kind of details that you might hold on to that are beyond just name, address, company, and, you know, revenue from last year?
Yeah. So it's any information that I don't want to forget, where I met them. Met at the chamber event. If it's a prospect, I may say he sat next to me. He was tall and had blonde hair. You know, anything to help jog my memory. But and then in conversation, if I met him at the chamber event and he's an organizer of a networking group, and is interested in my presentation and wants me to follow up next month, that's what I'm going to put in that notes section. And then I'll set a reminder for October 30th. So that when October 30th comes along, I'm not trying to remember anything. I simply go into my notes section and go, okay, now I remember. And I follow up. So it's what you need to remember is what goes in there. If you want to reach out on birthdays, you got to have their birthday in there.
Okay. And that's kind of leads me into where I was going next. It is, what are the kind of things that you are touching base on? Because birthdays is easy. If you can get that information, a lot of times it's available on LinkedIn. LinkedIn shows you work anniversaries and so on. Are there low-lying fruit that's there that are ways to connect with people that are very, very friendly and very relationship building that aren't necessarily salesy?
Yeah. So it's a mix. I always say when you're in the staying in touch phase or you're developing that relationship, you want it to be a mixed bag of goods, because what happens is people fall into the trap of electronics and technology is their be all and end all line for everything, communication and staying in touch. And you need to be more than that. So handwritten cards, social media connections, and maybe notifying them something exciting about your business or a new product or service, or maybe you pick up the phone and just want to call and see how you're doing. I mean, there's just, you want to be creative and think outside of the technology box, because the whole world's staying in touch through technology. And what are you doing that's standing out and that's different?
Okay. You are from down south, or you're living down south right now, okay? And something tells me that if you pick up your phone and call someone who is also from the south just to say, hey, how's it going? I just was thinking about you and wanted to see how your day is. Somehow I feel like that would be much more well received than up here in, you're calling somebody in New York City and say, hey, I was just wondering how your day is going. And they're like, I would imagine them saying at the lunch table, like, I had this guy who called me this morning and he just wanted to see how I was doing. And I was like, I got stuff to do. I don't have time to be on the phone telling you how my day is going. What's kind of the balance there? And do you find that that's regional at all?
No, because I spent a lot of time in California. That's, where my home base is. And I call people all around the country. And so you have to be really careful not to think you know what somebody's going to think. And if I'm calling I just want to, it's been a while since we talked, just want to call and see how you're doing. People are honest. Oh, I'm doing great. But you know what? I'm heading into a meeting or I'm under a deadline, and the call is going to be very short. But I'm not going to take that on as they didn't want to talk to me. So just remember that the only thing you have control over is your action, and you have no control over what they're going to think, how it's going to work out, how it's going to end. And if somebody's offended because I was calling to see how they're doing,
maybe that's not somebody you want to do business with.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's so funny that you say that, because I remember there was a story about, a boyfriend and girlfriend, and before they were dating, he had asked her, like, hey, do you want to go out on Friday night or something? And she says, no, I've got plans with my family. And he was just totally bummed out and thought that, she's not interested in me. And it turns out, she was very interested, but on Friday night, she literally had plans with their family. She wasn't blowing him off. She was telling him the truth. And so there is that fine line of understanding between when somebody says no, it might, as you've said, it might just be that it's not right now. And other people, they are no means no people. Do you have any, you gave me a statistic what I thought was really cool. You told me that is it 80% of sales happen between contacts 5 and 12? Do you have any other cool statistics like that? I'm a math person, and statistics like that I love.
Okay, yes, I have a few of them. So 80% of sales are made between the fifth and 12th contact, but only 10% of people make three or more. And I believe that is a spot on statistic as well. And so that shows that how much business is being left on the table if you're in what I call the elite 10% that's willing and able to make three or more contacts. Older research told us that 49% of people, I'm sorry, 48% of people never followed up. And I was never in agreement with that because I always felt it was so much worse. Newer research is telling us that 79% of people never follow up. That I'm on board with. That's how bad it is out there. People don't do it. So I encourage your community, commit to your follow-up responsibilities, get your arms around it, because there's so much more opportunity for you because people don't do it. And when I say people, I'm talking about your competitors. So if be the one, be in the elite 10%. And then the last statistic I have for you is that only 2% of sales are made on the first contact. So that means 98% of the time you have to follow up.
Got it. Okay. We're almost out of time, and this will be my last question for you.
Okay.
What kind of time frame would you say is an appropriate follow-up time frame? If I reach out to somebody, maybe I send them an email and I don't hear back from them, how long before I should reach back out to them to as that part of that follow-up?
Oh, I have a whole system that I teach on that. So it would take probably about 15 minutes for me to get into every touch because I take you out to the 12 contacts. But you know, you don't want to be following up every day, every other day. Now, I know there are people out there that do that, but most people aren't of that makeup.
Right.
Comes across as pushy.
No doubt. I bet that the CRM that they're using is more annoying and not less annoying.
Yes.
Okay. Wonderful. Hey, Wanda, you've been fantastic. Since you don't have time to get into your whole system, if people are looking to find out more about you, about your speaking, about your systems and your training, where can they find you?
They can go to my website, followupsalesstrategies.com. And I have a couple free gifts there for you. I have a free workshop, virtual 3-hour workshop that I teach, totally free. And then I also have a guidebook on there that you can get for free.
Wonderful. I really appreciate that. And I will definitely put that into the show notes so that people can find you and connect with you. And for anybody who is doing sales, that is such a key. And I appreciate you sharing. We have come to the time for three questions to establish your humanity. Are you ready for this?
I am.
Okay.
I think.
Absolutely. Do you have a friend that is such a good friend that you would consider them to be family?
Oh, yes.
Can you give me an example of who that might be?
Oh, gosh, I've got three of them. Well, one of them is my childhood best friend. We've been friends since we were 12 years old. And when you have someone like that in your life, they are like family. You know their family, they know your family, versus meeting a really good friend when you're an adult. It's just different.
Yeah.
But I have two other friends that I've met through business that would do anything for me. I could call them any time of night or day, and I know they'd be there.
Yeah, it's really cool. When I was growing up, I had two friends that I was really close with. One of them was a guy named Mark, and I grew up out in Philadelphia. I moved to Pittsburgh. He came out to visit, met one of my wife's friends, and they got married. He lived across the street from me and sadly passed away probably 3.5 years ago from cancer. But his wife and his sons live two doors down from us, and I'm still close with them. And I, you know, made the promise to him that no matter what happens, I will always keep an eye out for his family. Those are the kind of people that, you know, they may not be blood kin, but they're as close as family can get.
Yeah.
What is one thing that really to you will kind of calms you and keeps you at peace for the day?
Oh, I start my day out every morning, almost every morning. 30 minutes in the Bible. I love it. Keeps me grounded.
You can't go wrong there. You've got your word of wisdom for the day that keeps everything safe.
It's the best self-help personal development book on the planet.
No doubt about that. Okay. You are down south. You're in Mississippi. Tell me, what is a Mississippi staple as far as food goes? What is the thing that you say, this should be the Mississippi state dish, or something along those lines that you would say this is classic Southern food?
For me, it's fried catfish. It is simple. It is so good. And mashed potatoes and gravy. That is my guilty pleasure. Okay. Definitely.
All right. I will give you honest truth here. And that is, now that they have farm raised catfish, it's a lot better. Because when I was a kid and you would catch catfish and you would like in the river and you brought them home. And when you could fry them up, and my mom was whatever it was, they still tasted like mud. But nowadays they've got the corn fed farm raised catfish, and they don't taste like mud. You're right. They are absolutely delicious. And how can you go wrong with that? The Southern tradition is that whatever it is that is around, let's fry it. And how can you go wrong with that? Right.
Yeah. And you know what's crazy out here, which is never in California, gas stations here have the best food. I mean, like my husband, I don't eat fried chicken, but they have the best fried chicken. You get it at gas stations, fried catfish. I mean, it was so crazy, but it is some of the best.
Okay. Real quick, I'm a dad and I love dad jokes. And I remember there was a gas station that had a sign out front, and they were advertising that they had food as well as gasoline. And their sign said, "Eat here, get gas." I don't think that it meant exactly what it said, but you understand where I'm coming from. Wanda, thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate you sharing. And to all my listeners, thank you. I hope that you have enjoyed this and learned as much as I have. And I will remind you that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.